And good afternoon. It is Wednesday, February the 20th, 2019. 16 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you for the ride today. And today we're joined by one of my favorite guests, who we are joined by every third Wednesday of the month from 12:10 to 1 p.m. This week, this visit, to talk about spring cleaning, which we didn't get a chance to get to last time, eliminating clutter, and St. Patrick's Day, which is just right around the corner. She is the undisputed queen of helpful hints, Heloise. Heloise, how are you?
Well, hello, Scott, and hello from sunny San Antonio, where it's about 43 here, which for us, midday is, could be a little cold. Highly unusual.
You know, we're going to be in the 40s the rest of the week, it looks like. Doable in February in the Midwest.
I know. I used to live in the East. You know, my father was stationed at the Pentagon. So we lived in Arlington, Virginia. So I was used to the changes in weather, and spring comes and, oh, you know, it's warmer. Wow, it's 45. And now living in San Antonio for the last 34 years, I'm like, what do you mean it's getting cold?
You know, it's interesting. One of the things I have never been able to figure out is people who live in Manhattan and people who live in Washington, D.C., obviously, that's East Coast weather. They get some very bad weather, but it doesn't seem to bother them as much. They just keep on going.
Well, part of it, if you live in Manhattan, you're buffeted by tall buildings. So you may have to walk 10 blocks to work, but the tall buildings kind of, you know, unless there's snow and ice on the ground, which is very slippery and you must be careful about. And in D.C., because we lived in Arlington, literally, I woke up every morning and went to bed every night looking at the Pentagon. Mm. My father, the lieutenant colonel, worked at the Pentagon, and basically his comment was, I can walk more quickly to my office in the Pentagon from our apartment building, River House, number 1600, then drive and park his car and walk into the building.
Well,
you adapt to the surroundings.
Well, you know, that's very true, because when I have been in Manhattan to do programs, that's when people usually say, oh my goodness, the traffic and all this. And yeah, New York has a lot of traffic, Manhattan has a lot of traffic, but New York is on a grid system, so
mm-hmm.
if you miss it, you can always get back to where you were. But I tell people, D.C., that to me was the worst city to drive in. Because there are streets that go in a Y direction, one-way streets, very confusing.
Very, very confusing, and we lived in D.C. for a while before my parents found their apartment at the River House, and you're on Y Street, so you would think next one follows the alphabet, oh no.
No.
And then you're on 2nd Street, and you think the next one should be 3rd Street. Or first. Oh, no. That makes absolutely some of the best cabbies in the world. D.C.
Would have to be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And whenever I do book tour, you know, when I have a new book coming out, or the book is out, and I'm on book tour, I would stay at the same hotel in D.C., and I swear to you, amazingly, I may get the same cab driver. whatever the station is there. And it's like, oh, gosh, 6 a.m. Because in D.C., you work for the government, you're up at 4 or 5 a.m.
It's an early town.
And you better be ready. So these cab drivers, and I'm like, I'm looking at the guy, and I'm like, I'm going to station. And he said, blah, blah, said, yeah, I'm doing the morning show. Oh, yes, I drove you the last time. Okay, you know where the station is. Yes, ma'am, I do. Okay, now, Scott, do you broadcast from a studio?
Yes.
Okay, So you know how to drive to your studio, correct?
Uh-huh.
Those cabbies. And he would know. I was like, now, you know, it's 5 a.m. You can't go to the front door. If you've never done that before, there's no one there. The doors are all locked. So where do you go? You go around back. Back door. They're always open. There's somebody there. So my hint is, if you're going to a city you've never been to before, do a little research.
Oh, you have to. You have to. Because, and the GPS thing, you can just toss that out the window in D.C. because that lady gets so confused on the GPS. She doesn't know. All you hear is recalculating, recalculating, and by the time she's recalculated, you're in some neighborhood.
You're in Maryland.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, is right.
Yeah.
You know, you're in Maryland. You're like, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be in D.C. Like, you're not. And then the other interesting fact, Scott, since you've been there, physically, where is the Pentagon located?
It's centered.
Physically, yeah. The building is located on what property?
You know, I don't know that. I didn't go to the Pentagon.
Which side of the Potomac?
I don't know. The west side, I think. Isn't it the west?
Physically, it's in Virginia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not in D.C.
No.
Yeah, that is true.
There's the trivia question.
Now, isn't that west? I think that's west.
You know what? I'd have to be at the Riverhouse Apartments looking out at Washington National Airport, then I can tell you.
Well, you know what I can tell you, which you already know, is the White House, which is right in the center. And, you see these pictures on television of the White House all the time, and it looks like it's in a neighborhood. It's not.
Listen to you.
And I think the address for the White House is 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
That's right. I tell you, it's a mess because it does have a yard, and there is this big grassy area in front of the White House, but that's it. It sits in the middle of a lot of other stuff.
And if you're a tourist, you've never been to D.C. before, and you think the White House 0550, yeah. Doesn't it have its own address?
The White House, yes.
Here it is. I actually have an old-fashioned Rolodex. Well, not a Rolodex, of course. Okay, in my handwriting. White House, 1600 Pennsylvania. Zip code 20500. Would you like to know the direct number?
Oh, sure.
I'm not going to give it to you.
No, that's the direct number to which president?
The number doesn't change, Scott.
Oh, when's the last time you talked to the president? Was it the current president?
No.
Oh,
George
okay.
Bush.
Oh, George Bush. Okay.
Both father and son.
Now, was Barbara Bush handy? Was she, did she need helpful hints?
Not necessarily. She was a Texas gal and really, no, you know what? She did ask me one time, what was the question? No, it was the second Barbara. There was a question. What was it? It was... Oh, I know what it was. If you've been to the White House and you go on a public tour, they show you the China Room, where where they display the China from each president. And it's really fascinating that you walk through and see it. But she did ask with the scratches on the China from where they had served steak or something or other, and you have to use a knife to cut it, and it can cut through to the China. So for your listeners, if they're looking at their beautiful China or the stuff they use every day, and there's some scratches on it, you can't do anything about it.
The China is ruined.
No, it's not ruined.
Not ruined.
No, it's not ruined. It's just there's no way to remove that. It's not like someone's taken a crayon and marked it. Okay, that you can remove. By the way, for your listeners who have small children and grandchildren who tend to use crayons on a wall, you know what I mean. You can use baking soda, teeny bit of water. It's slightly abrasive, but it's not abrasive enough to remove it. It'll make that mark go away.
You know, I used to like it when every home had a set of china, and they, you know, they only put that out like if the Pope was coming to dinner. But it was there.
Yes.
It was there. Now, see, to me, that is lost art, because I think that was a creative thing that we don't do anymore.
Well, that was called display, to be on display, china. You may not have had a place setting for 12. You may have only two. Or only one that you could afford at that time. That was display china. And as you said, was generally only, I can see my grandmother, Amelia Bowles, Fort Worth, Texas, pulling the china out of the china cabinet, washing it all before using it. Then after using it, as you said, Easter, Christmas, Thanksgiving, and then washing it again and carefully putting it back up in the china cabinet, correct?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Now, here's the hell of a hint for you. Coffee filters, the ones that are round, are perfect. Either that or go buy a cheap roll of paper towels. And you never stack the china. You put a paper towel, coffee filter, something in between. Between each plate, each bowl, etc., then it doesn't get, the china itself doesn't get scratched.
Well, that's important, because I think the generation that is inheriting the china now has no idea what to do with it.
And what I learned from my mother, the original Heloise, is you may not, but right now, I can probably ask my executive assistant, Sharon, and her co-executive assistant, Norma, to walk down into my house, go to the china cabinet, and there could be two place settings missing. Because guess what? I use them every day. And the old, really bad joke used to be, if you don't use them, the second or third wife will.
Oh.
Oh.
Well,
so why not at least pull out two place settings? Eat your morning breakfast on it. Drink your orange juice out of a crystal wine glass. Because if you don't, someone else will.
Well, that's true. And here's what I think is happening before we get on to St. Patrick's Day here. What I think is happening with this china, because I do find this interesting, because it did seem to go back generations, and it used to have a very detailed story equipped with it. So I always wondered, when people came over on the Mayflower, they must have just brought their china, because I think there could have been nothing else, because it seemed like everybody's china went back at least 400 years.
Probably not the china plateware itself that they always brought, stirring silver cutlery. Smaller, lighter, carries the weight. You don't have to carry much. But if you have a true sterling silver fork, knife, spoon, that's silver.
You know, it seems to me like there used to be a saying, if the house is on fire, grab the good china. I think there was something like that at one point. As if that would be what you would grab.
It depends on what is important to you, to the individual, what either carries history, this is my grandmother's, or my great-grandmother's, you brought the subject up. Before my mother became Heloise, we lived in Washington, D.C., Buckingham Apartments, something or other, second story. They had things from literally China, the country that my parents had lived in. And apparently there was a fire that started. Mother, who was 5'2 and 105, she ran downstairs and ran out. And the neighbors are all like, okay. And she ran, this is the truth. My brother, she ran back up those stairs and grabbed a lamp. It was a lamp or a clock. And then came back down. It was something that meant a lot to her. I have no idea about the history. So when someone says, if there's a fire, grab the china, I would say grab the sterling.
That's probably true, but I don't know if this tradition's fading out, because I wonder where the china is going, because if I go to people's houses who are in their 30s or 20s, I don't see it, even if it's the inheritance has already happened. And it doesn't seem like that's something that is continually going from generation to generation. So I don't know where all this china that was around in the 50s, 60s, 70s has all ended up.
You know where it's going?
Pawn shops.
Pawn shops? Resale shops? Tag sales? That's where.
Now think about that. Grandma's china is probably in the pawn shop now.
Oh, I would hope not. Or I would hope at least save one piece. Save a teacup. Something or other. That's history. Family history that goes on.
You got to. And the stories that are attached with them,
oh my goodness,
just as important.
It's truly. Here I'm telling you, and I don't think, and my executive assistants are out there listening, by the way. I don't think they even know the story. That mother going back up there and grabbing, it was a lamp or a something that meant something to her. No one else, the firefighters, the firemen, didn't have a clue. My father gets called home from the Pentagon, by the way, from the Pentagon, and drives up. And there are the fire trucks and the policemen, and they're like, well, sir, you can't come in. And she said, that's my wife. Oh, okay. And it was the lamp or a clock. Only Daddy, who's now resting in heaven, would know the history. I don't know that.
Well,
so what I would say to you, Scott, and your listeners, is there is something, some piece of china, maybe a funky armchair, whatever, that you know the history to. that's what is important to you.
That is true. And one more question about this, because I do think this is fascinating. If people are going out to pawn shops or tag sales or even garage sales, how can you tell a good piece of china from a bad piece?
Well, I can tell you how I can tell one if it's older. Turn it over. Run your finger around the rim. If it's a little gravelly, that means that piece of china, whether it's a dinner plate or a serving bowl, a gravy boat, whatever, has been used a lot. If it's slick and you can't feel anything, it's new. Or never been used a lot.
That is a good hint. That's a good one.
And it's really important when you, and I love tag sales, garage sales. Just kind of, here's the hell we sent to. Look at everything first, then take a second round. Don't automatically grab. Go look at everything that's displayed. Kind of look at it, right? And then go around, and you'll the pieces that are important to you personally, they'll talk to you. You'll look at this. I have the most gorgeous. My father was born in Rosebud, Texas. And as we say in Texas, a spit in the road. One traffic stop. I mean, literally, one traffic light back then. And you could tell it's been used a lot. Maybe only special Sunday dinners, etc. But it's been used. It's got history. It's got love in it. And if it talks to you and says, I think I need to belong in your home, that's the piece you need to buy.
I think you're right. I think that's the way to approach those things. Now, Heloise, we are very close to St. Patrick's Day, right around the corner, the big green Irish holiday. What should we be doing to prepare for St. Patrick's Day?
Well, I can only, as part Irish as I am, Scotch-Irish and Cherokee-Indian, but throw all that together, and I think I'm an international mix here. my mother would do, and my father, excuse me, the lieutenant colonel, pilot, would go off. Mother would fix for the kids. The milk they'd drink in the morning, normally we would back in those days. She put green food coloring in it. She would make us green pancakes. That's pretty St. Patrick's Day, don't you think?
I think it is. But see, it doesn't look very appetizing when it's green.
You know what? When you're a kid, who cares?
Well, that's right.
When you're 7, 8, 9 years old, that's pretty cool.
Oh yeah, I think it's a good idea because I think it was over last holiday, Christmas. I think where I saw one of the restaurants was serving Grinch pancakes, which were green pancakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a thing. It's a thing.
And then the other thing you can do, here's the really good Halloween hint, is you buy the least expensive, which is a nice term for saying the cheapest, white carnations. Now, I've tested this in my Halloween test kitchen. My mother did it. Take 3 glasses, put green food coloring, you know, water about quarter minute, no, about half an inch. Please remember to filling the vase all the way up with water. The flour only sucks in the water from the bottom. So filling the vase all the way up is not beneficial. So you cut the bottom of the at an angle so it can suck up more water. And then you do green food colored one. Next one's red. And then you mix, oh God, I'm not the artist, red and blue. Red and blue makes purple, I believe. Yes. Correct? Yes. My Hillary Central Magpies. Yes. Red and blue. So you mix, so you've got purple. Put the carnation in each of those. And by the next day, guess what you have? You'll see, it's a good osmosis question, test for your kids, too. It'll start coloring on the outside of each petal. And you'll look at it and you'll think, well, they didn't start out that way. And by the next day, go cut off another quarter inch, half inch, at an angle. It'll suck up more water to nourish the flower, but it's also the color.
Well, that's great, because I think St. Patrick's Day, really, more, maybe more than any other event all year round, is really about the color.
I would agree with you, yes.
I mean, it's all about green. Everything is green. There's not even a derivation on St. Patrick's Day. You know, so like on Valentine's Day, which just passed, you know, red is obviously the color, but some people do pink, and some people even go into other colors.
It's kind of like a derivation of red.
But at St. Patrick's time, it's green. That's the way to go. Now, this is, to me, more of the party-gathering holiday. Now, if you are throwing a party on St. Patrick's Day, what's the best way to do it? Do you want to actually do it on the day? Because a lot of times it falls during the week.
Well, and that's the big question, is if it's during the week and most of your friends and relatives are working, kind of hard to take off unless you do it after hours or after work hours. And then, hang on a second. Can you hold on, Scott?
Yeah, go right ahead. We're chatting with Heloise here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Sure.
Scott. Here's a really good trivia question.
All right.
Okay. San Antonio, where I live, has a tributary, small river that runs through downtown San Antonio, which is really quite charming, by the way. They have dinner barges, and you can have dinner, and it'll take you down the river, and you get to see parts of downtown that you may not have seen. For St. Patrick's Day, guess what they do?
Oh, I bet I know the answer to this.
I'm sure you do. The answer is?
They dye it.
They do.
What do they use?
I am not sure, but I know that, because I was the Grand Marshal of one of the river parades, it is not detrimental to wildlife, because there are parts of the San Antonio River that if you go a little bit out of downtown, birds, egrets, etc., a little bit further. So it's not detrimental to wildlife, but let me tell you, it's green.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I don't know if we have anything like that here in Ohio. I'm sure there's something, but on a St. Patrick's Day that I'll always remember, I was going to Indianapolis to interview somebody, and it just happened to be, it was either St. Patrick's Day or the day before St. Patrick's Day. It was very close to St. Patrick's Day. So I drove to Indianapolis, and there's a river that goes through Indianapolis, Indiana, that they dye green. So that's very creative.
I, I used to go to Indianapolis a lot. I'm trying to remember. Where's the river? It's
right downtown. Right downtown where all the hotels.
Yes.
Yeah. Very close to the Hoosier Dome. Used to be called the Hoosier Dome.
Yes. And see, I can see it in my mind's eye. And I'm going to be a real Texan here. Not as big as our river. I'm teasing you.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting how things happen. We talked about D.C. here, and we've talked about presidents, and we've talked about Texas. And one thing that encompasses all of that, and I don't know if you knew her or not. She's passed away maybe more than 10 years now. But I used to love, because being a fan of the media, White House correspondent Sarah McClendon.
I knew her.
Oh, I loved her. She was
that woman.
Oh.
Far ahead of her time, correct?
Ow. I think she was a...
Did you just say Al?
No, yes.
Yes.
Did it come out Al? It might have come out Al. I don't know.
No, but I knew her.
Oh.
And let me tell you, that woman was a tough cookie. And when she stood up at the White House press conferences, every president took her question, didn't they?
Well, they did. Because
they knew it was going to be a doozy.
Well, and it was.
She was going to ask the questions that nobody else would ask.
Well, it was fascinating because she was very loud. And.
Well, she did have. Yes, she had this lower octave range voice that either. That was natural. Or she developed it because of standing out in a press conference.
Mm.
She was, and you always respected her, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I think she covered every president from Franklin Roosevelt to, I think the last one she covered was Bill Clinton. I think by the time W. Bush came in, she was in a wheelchair. But she lived to be 92, so she had a great life.
And she was, as I say, the magpie.
Oh.
And do you know what I learned from her?
What's that?
I truly did. Is that we became chums. Not, you know, I'm on book tour. I go to the station. We'd chat a little bit afterwards, maybe have some coffee, some iced tea or something. And I remember talking to her one time and kind of trying to glean the wisdom. And that's my other hint. When you're talking to somebody who has that knowledge, information, listen. Just listen. They'll tell you. And I looked at her, and one day I said, it was like, you know, you and my mother are very similar, because mother just barged her way. My mother talked her way into the White House. Actually, I talked my way into the White House. But anyway, and she said, people want to talk. And I'm kind of looking at Sarah, thinking, wait, I'm interviewing you. So I have this set of questions I'm going to ask you. And she did the same, and she said, people want to talk, let them talk.
You know, it's interesting. There are two things, I think, of note and important to remind people about this woman, if they don't remember her, look her up. Sarah McClendon, is that she never worked for a major wire service,
no.
A major network. She was just an independent, but yet she became world-renowned because she was... the way she did things, and
did Scott?
Yes.
Did you know she actually interviewed Adolf Hitler?
No, I didn't know that.
She did.
I can imagine she might have. She was a
before he became the Führer. But
oh.
She did. She had a gift or a knack. She did.
I just, the thing that sticks in my mind about her is when Bill Clinton came into office, she was about, well, she would have been in her 80s. And so this was really the last president that she covered extensively. And Bill Clinton was going through his mess, which we all know about. And her question was, I'll never forget watching this press conference. She said, is there, you know, he called on her, Sarah, and she said, is there any circumstance under which you would resign the presidency? And this also speaks to Bill Clinton. He said, well, if you'd run away with me. So, classic moment.
And her question to Mr. Clinton, president at the time, was what?
Her question was, is there, when he was going through all his troubles, was, is there any circumstance under which you would resign the presidency? And Bill Clinton's reply was, well, maybe if you ran away with me. So it was, you know, two clever people. You don't see that in press conferences now.
Not often. Because if you'll remember, Scott, in those days, press conferences were, not that they were private, but they didn't have all the media. They didn't have CNN with the camera on the entire time, correct?
Oh, that is true.
Yes.
That is true. But she was a great Texan, but boy, she adapted D.C. as her home and really made a go of it for about 70 years.
She did.
A lady to be admired for sure. And that stuck in my mind because McClendon, now is that an Irish name?
I beg your pardon, what?
Is McClendon an Irish name?
McClendon?
McClendon.
I have no idea.
I was thinking it might be with St. Patrick's Day coming up, because I don't think that was her married name. I don't think so. But an interesting woman, to be sure. Now, Heloise, in the 10 minutes we've got here, we did not get to this last month, so I want to touch on it, because spring cleaning is coming. This is late February, and spring is the 21st of March, so we are very close. What tips do we need for spring cleaning?
Well, my first hint from Heloise would be, take a very good look at the abode where you live. The most time, kitchen table, heavy, chatting with friends. Dining room area, maybe, maybe not. Back porch. Those are the places you need to focus on. Where you live the most, or spend most of your time, and you're most comfortable. Then, you get one trash bag and one bin, and you go through and you pick up what really can probably go in the trash bag, correct?
I would say so.
Stuff that kind of like hangs around. Then the other bin is sort of, well, this is my grandfather's this. Put them in those bin, put it away, put it in the garage, in a closet you don't use. And then if you find yourself every month or so going back and saying, oh, but, you know, I really, this is important to me, then you keep that. And then thirdly, if, and I have worked with battered women's shelters, homeless shelters and everything, please do not donate damaged goods. T-shirts that are holy, you know, I mean, not holy as in, but, and only donate items that you think or feel that someone else can use to their benefit. And then you'll feel okay about letting it go.
Well, this is important to me because I have a garage that has been accumulating
Uh-oh.
Things. Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh.
For about for about 3 years.
Oh.
And last year I was going to tackle it because you don't want to do it in the winter in Ohio.
No.
So I knew it had to be in warmer weather. But last year we went right from spring to summer. And it always seemed just hot, and I seemed busy. But it's got to be dealt with, because I'm not even sure what is in there anymore.
Scott, can I tell you?
Yes.
I'm a fortune teller. My guess is there are items in the back left-hand corner that you don't even know what's there.
Oh, I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it.
And if you don't know what's there, and you haven't gone to look for it, then it probably doesn't mean that much to you. Correct?
Well, that's true. But, you know, there are catch-22s in that, because there is something in there that takes up a lot of space, and they're in totes, and I haven't used them in years, and I probably will never use them again.
But they still feel good to you.
Well, they do. I'll tell you what they are. They're my college textbooks and notebooks.
Oh, my goodness.
So I kept them all, for some reason, and I would toss them in these totes when a quarter was over.
Yeah.
So they take up a lot of space, and I know they're in there, and they're heavy, because they're in totes, but I've kept them all. So I got to do something about that, though, because they do take up a lot of space.
Now, I get to play anti-Tia shrink here. Do they still mean something to you?
I haven't looked at them in probably over a decade.
Doesn't matter. Do you still feel a connection?
I think so, because I really don't know what's in there. Maybe it's more curiosity.
Could be. But if these items, regardless of what they are, still you feel a connection to them, as long as you're not having to pay for the storage, or it's taking up space to park the snowmobile or something or other, then what's the harm?
Well, I think it's just space, because it's such a bulky, heavy, I mean, it's not just one tote. In 5 years of college, 3/4 a year, that's a lot of stuff.
And what you can do, and I learned this the hard way. I inherited not only my mother's name, but a lot of her stuff and my father's stuff and things that meant a lot to them. And I would walk by. We've got this one walk-in closet that's supposed to be a coat closet. Not anymore. And I would walk by and just go, oh, I can't do it. I just cannot do it. And then I thought, you know, that woman who writes the newspaper column, the one that's in the paper and tells you what to do, and thought, okay, straight down the fly run, daughter of an Air Force pilot, walk in, get one tote, go through it, and amazingly, and I would only do it like once a week, once a month, maybe. I'd walk by that closet and it was like, come to me. You've got all this clutter. And I'm like, oh. And I thought, no. One at a time. Separated. What is really trash goes in the garbage bag. The other tote is, well, look at this. And the other one is, this can go to charity. This can go to the battered women's shelter. This can go to the homeless shelter. This, they'll use it. It'll be helpful. And it took me a long time, Scott. It truly, truly did. But I finally cleaned it out.
You know, in the last 2 minutes we have, because we can't tackle the decluttering, but we'll get to that next month because we'll have time. And maybe some more spring cleaning, because we'll be right in the midst of it next month. But, you know, I think I acquired this disease from this radio career, because when I started out in radio, I did not keep anything. I did not keep interviews I had done. I mean, they were socked away in computers or on cassettes,
yes.
But I didn't keep them. They were around, and they were transferred, and I just never kept anything I did, because most people who do jobs like these don't like to hear their own voice. So I didn't want them. And then about a decade passed.
Then you thought about it, didn't you?
Well, you know, I didn't, but people came up and said...
Didn't you interview so-and-so?
Yes, and they say, do you have a copy of that?
And you'd say...
No. No, and I don't even know, well, I tell you where it really came to a head, was I interviewed Eleanor Roosevelt's granddaughter, and as strange as it sounds, apparently, she did not do a whole lot of interviews, and the Hyde Park Museum, Presidential Library, Franklin Roosevelt, called and wanted a copy of that interview. Well, I didn't have it. I mean, it had been advertised, and it was slugged away on the internet that I had done this interview, but I didn't have a copy of it. And they wanted it. They wanted to put it away forever.
It's the real point is, think about first, most importantly, what's important to you. Now, you and I are in the media biz. We interview people. I've been on television with God knows who knows. Didn't you meet Mrs. Ford? Well, yes, passing in the green room. Hi, I'm... Oh, okay, that's a passing moment. But Scott, what you do is so important. When you do an in-depth or even a half an hour interview, one-on-one, that's history.
Well, and it also goes back to a saying that I think is important. One person's trash is another's treasure. Now, not that I think the interviews are trash, but
no.
To me, they're clutter.
Because you do it every day and have for, I'm sorry, how long?
17 years.
Yeah. So it's part of what you do. It's like somebody who looks over, you know, the calendar. Oh, it's a new month. You're thinking, yeah. But you never know when the person, and Scott, I think you will concur on this one. The person you're interviewing today is passing through on book tour or promoting something or other 10 years from now, maybe prominent.
Well, that's the funny thing. You know, one of the fascinating things is that a lot of times you'll think an interview is of the time, but then you listen to it 10 years later. And it's really, I mean, there might be moments that are of the time, but by and large, it's not of the time. And when you do so many interviews, you can't remember what people have said, 5 years ago. You can't remember what somebody said. You might remember.
Scott, trust me. I know.
Yes, I know. I talked to you about it.
Been through this. And it's the most important thing I can say is, and you've been through this, is each person I talk to, whether it's at a book signing or some media something or other, or I'm interviewing, it's one-on-one. They are the most important person in the room, and that's what counts.
Absolutely. Well, Heloise, it's been fascinating, as it always is. The time goes by so fast. Now, in March, we will definitely have to touch more on spring cleaning, because if it's warm enough, maybe I will have started to tackle this garage by that point. And you never know. Maybe we'll get a warm streak here.
Scott, I'll tell you what. How about if I come up there and help you?
Oh. Well, yes. And then I can show you my can openers.
No, really. Now, you understand. If I come to your home and I look at that garage, I'm going to clean it in 86, which means trash, most everything. Are you ready for that?
Well, maybe I'll leave for like 8 or 10 hours.
And let's end up this interview with the most important thing, just as you said. Do not ever go and clean out someone else's garage, closet, whatever you want to call it, without asking them, because you never know how important that one item is.
Absolutely. Heloise, happy St. Patrick's Day, and I will talk to you soon.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
The legendary Heloise, always a lot of fun.
Ohio Health.
Hi, gang, this is Gallagher. You know, WWGH1071.com is a place where you can live stream the show and find out what's right now. But also, a